Hey there, this is Kyle Hebert, the voice of Ryu from Street Fighter V. Rise up. The answer lies in the heart of battle. You're listening to ACMG Presents Talk Time Live. Hadouken!
It's time. Talk time. Let's go. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Live. Started in the 80s with Matt Cross. Dudes in the hood might have called that soft, but I carried that cross like Jesus did. Fast forward, I teach the kids to learn how to let go, live life, and show love to all things that don't matter where y'all from. And luckily, there's a show called Talk Time. We've been waiting for this for a long time. Dax kicks the facts on all the geek news. Special guests and unbiased reviews. Suburban kids, the hipster street dudes. All can learn something new. Me too. I heard words when no faith is empty. I stayed the course, though my haters tempt me. Beep the podcast, that'll make them envy. It ain't too trendy. It's ACMG. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Live.
Welcome back. This is ACMG Presents Talk Time Live, the Prime Show. I am your host, Dax Avery Josiah. With me this week, the return of Sir Michael Burhan himself from the UK. I brought him back on because we got an interesting conversation to talk about. And I said I wanted to talk about this about 2 weeks ago during the passing of Stan Lee. And then something really crazy and stupid happened in regards to Bill Maher and the comments that he said. And it had me thinking. I'm like, okay, he mentioned something about sophisticated literature and reference to, I'm thinking like Ernest Hemingway and Mark Twain and, you know, maybe William Shakespeare himself. Well, we're going to talk about that and compare and contrast because I've read a few. Sir Burhan has actually read many more verses and playwrights from Shakespeare himself. And we're going to see where Stan Lee stands in all this because it's like, I really believe in my heart of hearts that I think he levels up. So we're going to really talk about that thoroughly on our talk topic today. But we also got a lot of news going on in the world of ACMG. So I'm not even going to waste any time here, Mike. I'm going to go right to our segment here and let's find out what's new in the world of ACMG.
And now it's time to find out what's new in the world of ACMG.
First of all, welcome back to the show, and how are things overseas?
Busy. Very, very busy. I've been, since we last talked, I've been working my butt off, securing roles in stuff. I have a role in the new Wonder Woman movie.
Oh, so you can announce that now.
I'm announcing that here, yeah?
Well, congratulations.
I'm not going to say what it is, so you guys have to watch out for it. I also have done a role in the new MIB movie as well, so the spin-off that they're working on. I've been very, very busy. Been working on those movies. Had a few other projects as well, including like commercials and stuff like that. And recently auditioned for a Bollywood movie and a sitcom pilot.
Awesome. Hustling. That's what I like to hear. That's exactly what I like to hear. Well, thank you for having the time to come back on the show because I felt that you were most appropriate to do so, not just because of your accent, but most likely because – and not because you bring a more sophisticated feel to what we're going to talk about.
But, I do it with everything. I bring a sophisticated feel to everything I do.
Yeah, until you start getting rowdy. Then you turn it from Lord Alfred Hayes to Andrew Dice Clay, and that's where things start to fall.
That's off the dark Burhan, you know.
Exactly. You know, do you have your beard on?
No, I have my stubble now. I shaved the beard off.
Okay, so you're good Burhan right now. Burhan is with the beard.
Well, apparently it's – if I showed you that photo, didn't I? That's kind of Prince / tax attorney Burhan, apparently. That's what everyone's been labeling me as.
Awesome. But no, you have studied Shakespeare.
Yeah.
You know, so I felt like – and I've only really studied two playwrights – you know, when I was in school, and that was a long time ago, and that's like The Merchant of Venice and you know, Othello. So, I mean, I'm slightly versed in how he writes and what he writes about, but you're going to give me a more thorough, you know, emphasis on this, and we're going to compare and contrast that. But right now, I want to talk about some other things, too, because a lot of things came – well, news was kind of slow this week, but what we got to talk about is going to probably –
Well, some, unless you're someone who really hates Bethesda, then the news was rich and plentiful.
Exactly. But for the world of our favorite fandoms, I mean, it was kind of slow, but what was there was huge enough to talk about and may stretch us out. So let's talk about what shocked you this week on our ACMG Facebook group. And that was Marvel. Once again, the epidemic continues. They taken and canceled Daredevil from Netflix. I was watching a
video actually as well on this from a guy called Emergency Awesome.
Yes.
But he actually touches on this, but I will get into that in a second. Let you finish your train of thought.
Right. To me, you know, we saw this happen with, you know, the first, you know, it's bad. I really hate this because in my mind, and forgive me for those who are listening, but I remember, there's no comparison to this at all, but I remember watching, you know, to Today Show when Katie Couric was on September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And we just saw what we thought was an accident at first. Or she knew beforehand that what it probably was, but she was more certain that when it was when the third plane hit the building.
Yeah.
And she was more certain for that. And I don't want to compare and contrast this at all in a sense, but I had that instinct, that same instinct of, okay, Luke Cage and Iron Fist was actually... you know, cancel. Okay, that's something.
And they were, you know, the common theme on this is that they were canceled when they got good.
Right, exactly. Yeah, well said, exactly. So, shortly after, and we're like, okay, it was been said in articles and a lot of, you know, media formats that Daredevil's still going to stay. They're going to go through and do a fourth season. You know, Jessica Jones, Punisher's going to get at least one more season. Say it again?
They were planning it. They were literally writing it as they were doing that.
And I think they were plotting this from the beginning at this point, you know? And all of a sudden, we blown up everywhere on Twitter, on IGN, on all different media formats. Boom, 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 boom. Daredevil, cancel at the height of their best season. And that's saying a lot because their other two seasons was no joke either. But this was this is insane, and it's like, okay, if they're not plotting to get this on Disney Plus, I don't know what is. But there's also an article out there that's saying Disney is not doing anything with this. It's completely scrapped.
Well, the Emergency Awesome video that was still discussing this was actually contradicts that article. Mm-hmm. It says that basically Disney are still going to use the characters, but they can't use them in the current format that they're in. So the Netflix shows, because Netflix invested the money in the show, they own the rights to those episodes.
That's why they said we could keep them. We're still going to have possession of those episodes.
Yeah, and that's basically the reason why they've canceled these shows. And apparently they're going to be doing the same to Jessica Jones and The Punisher. Right. It's because their deal with Disney has finished, and Disney want them to pay more money to retain the rights to these characters. And Netflix are like, what's the point when we've just bought Miller World?
Yeah.
And we've also got our own... like other shows like Sabrina is a big hit right now. They're planning season 2.
But Sabrina's also owned by WB. So, I mean, who's to say WB won't do the same thing?
Well, WB don't have no interest in investing in a streaming service for their Archie characters.
Right.
They're doing it mostly for the DC characters.
Right.
But and I have to give a shout out to Titans. It's actually gone a lot better from the pilot. The pilot was just like terrible.
For Sabrina?
No, for Titans.
Oh, for Titans. Oh, you know what? I've watched the first three episodes. You're right. It is starting to grow. And I'm not going to watch I'm going to binge through it when it's all over.
Yeah. You can tell they're getting comfortable. Yeah, they're getting comfortable in their skin, sort of thing, and things are starting to actually. The plot threads are starting to tie together.
A lot of fanfare too. I hear is in there too. Like Wonder Girl, Robin has been seen in here now, and
apparently they're going to have the Trinity in there in an episode as well.
Wow.
But yeah, so you've got these situations where Netflix doesn't want to pay a lot of money. The big issue is that they want to focus on what they want to kind of focus on, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and I don't fault Netflix for doing this.
No, nor do they really have to, in a sense. And they've done, but I mean, they were big before Marvel came in. And just adding with the Marvel format, it just made it broader.
Yeah. But apparently when they got the episodes before, when they plotted this all out, they got it for a steal. That's why they had all these characters and they were doing the Defender series and everything like that. Because they had plans for it. Mm-hmm. But when things didn't start translating the way that they should, and then when Disney came out saying that they're going to put out their own streaming service and they want to move everything over to that, apart from the Netflix shows, which the only way they could do that is if they actually bought the rights to those shows from Netflix.
Right.
So they can't, you know, do that. They can use the characters, they can use the settings, they can use the names. They just can't do it in the same way that Netflix has done it.
Now,
so we're not saying that we won't see Matt Murdock again doing another Daredevil series,
right?
But it won't be Netflix Marvel's Daredevil on Netflix.
Do you think they'll use all the same actors?
I hope so, because I think everybody who's worked on these shows is invested in their characters.
And established, exactly. Yeah.
And they're iconic in their own rights, because they've set the portrayals. Like Wilson Fisk, for instance, is probably the
There's not been a better Wilson Fisk than the one we had on this series.
Yeah. So, you know, I would love to see him move over to the Spider-Man cinematic universe, in my opinion.
Oh, my God. That would be so dark.
And there's potential. They can do it, you know. So they've got the whole reason, the whole thing that comes down to, and it's a simplistic reasoning, is money. Netflix doesn't want to pay the extortionate amounts that Disney want for it. And Disney don't want to give these characters away for a steal because they're already established now.
Yeah.
And because they have their own streaming service, they can do what they want. So, you know, for everyone who's invested and who's upset, I understand. But the problem is, this is all down to business and politics.
It is.
Right now.
But my fear, and this is my concern, and I've mentioned this before because I did a whole entire episode on these streaming networks and how and whether people are cutting the cord per se by doing so, and I did the math. All these streaming networks are stretching people's wallets thin.
Yeah.
All of these options, I mean, there's so many options. Marvel now, I mean, Disney has one now, DC has one now, we got WWE Network, we got the UFC Fight Pass, we have Boomerang, we have, I mean, Jesus Christ, and then on top of that, you gotta have the cable. So you got Dish Network, you got Sling, you got PlayStation View. It's stretching thin. How are people trying to make any type of profit by separating and dividing, you know, this division of continuity is crazy.
Eventually, real-time cable is going to be dead. You know, the people, more and more people will be cutting the cord. Streaming service is the next big thing.
People aren't really cutting the cord, though. That's the problem.
I know, because a lot of people still like to binge watch their TV in a certain way. But once that, eventually that will happen. You know, a lot more younger generation are cutting the cord now.
The problem is, cutting the cord is kayfabe.
But for me, I love the streaming service. Like Netflix is great. I'm thinking of canceling my Netflix subscription as soon as the Disney service comes up.
Really?
Because the majority of the shows that I watch on Netflix are either sitcoms or the Disney shows. But most of the stuff I can get from Netflix, I can get from the other site. So that's what I'm looking at. But again, I'm going to have to see what Disney. I might do a trial and see what Disney has to offer before I cut that cord. That's the big problem.
My primary. Because I'm probably considered like an older generation of streaming now. It has been always Hulu and Netflix, and if you combine those together, that's cable.
For me, it's Amazon and Netflix,
don't like about Amazon.
Yeah.
And they got more that you need to buy than you can actually view for free.
Oh, I agree.
And that's always been a problem. Like, I'm paying for shipping. I'm not paying to watch any of the TV shows on there. It's like it's I looked at it and I'm like, there's some really cool stuff that they have on there that I really want to see, but you have to buy it. So I'm like, what's the part of you having a streaming network in here? Why y'all advertising it like y'all really got something going in comparison to like Hulu and Netflix at this point? That was always been my beef with that. Like, and a lot of the continuity that they have on there, I have yet to really been interested in watching it. Maybe except for that one series where it involves the female comedian. That I have not, I need to take time to watch it. I forgot what it was called, but it has the woman who plays Griffin's, you know, Peter Griffin's wife on air.
Yeah.
But I forgot the name of it. I really forgot the name of it, but it looks really good now.
Is it Nancy Cartwright?
Yes. No, not Nancy Cartwright, because that's
Simpsons.
Yeah, that's the Simpsons. But it's I mean, that one won some awards too, but other than that, it's like I don't have an interest in any of the continuity that they have on that streaming site. But that's here nor there, to each his own. But I digress. I mean, like, it's just too much of these streaming sites, and like if you look at it and you're paying, I mean, yes, everybody will have their own preference of what they want, but how much of the market are you really getting at the end of the day? Because everybody has their own niche. And then I don't believe that everybody has, especially here in the States, I truly don't believe that the economy is that built up for us to be spending this much money recklessly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was always my biggest concern with that. So the fact that they're trying to get in on a streaming network thing, it's like, how much of a market are you getting here?
The thing is, you've got to look at who owns the most market share in this, and Disney are going to be that only platform who does.
As far as what, you know, what market share?
They have a huge catalog, Marvel, Star Wars. They have the Disney catalog as well, their live action movies. Yeah, they have everything. And if this service is going to be a big hitter, it could be something that would end up decreasing Netflix's market share, even though Netflix at the moment is probably the biggest in terms of the platforms.
But they still have, I mean, Disney has Disney. And maybe they own a couple other companies, studios as well, you know, sister companies or brother companies as well out there. But I still think Netflix has the license, and Hulu at that. They have the license and right to play so many other movies. It's going to be interesting. I mean, because you got, all right, say you want all the Marvel movies. That's great. But this is the part where I think people are wasting their money, because guarantee most of us have this stuff on digital or DVD already. So why are we paying a monthly fee to get something that we already have?
That's the thing. It's all about content.
Yeah.
So if the content's any good, then yes.
Now, if per se they had some animated shows that we haven't seen in a long time, say Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, maybe the first X-Men pilot, maybe the original Avengers, World's Mightiest Heroes, that might kind of do something, but not to that extent. I mean, I tried with the DC thing, but it's like, nah, I can't do it. I just can't at this point.
Yeah, DC service I can understand, because they don't have enough.
No.
And that's the problem. Right. And also, they're trying to back end it by saying, we'll give you some discounts on these like digital comics and stuff.
Yeah.
But also, we're going to add brand new shows that haven't been tried and tested. The only one thing that people want to see is the Young Justice series.
You know what? That's the part that really pissed me off so bad.
Because you're hiding it behind a paywall.
Yeah, we finally got this thing back, and they hold it hostage under their own realm. So it's like, all right. And also, like, I just recently, I messed with New Japan World for like about 2 months. Loved it, but their interface it sucks so bad. It's like I couldn't really. It's nowhere near as organized as WWE.
Yeah,
nowhere.
Even though I've cut their network off recently because
with WWE or New Japan.
WWE, because I got tired of watching their terrible product.
You know what? The only reason why I'm keeping it right now is because of NXT.
Mm.
That literally, I honest to goodness, I mean, there's some okay things that I watch too, but NXT is literally the only thing that I watch. Now they got NXT UK now, which has been really good too. But other than that, yeah, you're right. I mean, and of course the Crockett the old Crockett footage in the Mid-South and all the stuff. That's pretty much what I – that was the reason why I wanted it in the first place, was to watch the old the Crockett, you know, library, which they have all in full now. They finally decided to, you know, chime in. But, again, it's stretching. I mean, I got Funimation, too. That's another, like, 590. It's just stretching it so much. I don't – people are just, you know, are splurging or recklessly spending – without even thinking. I've even talked to people on on the ACMG Facebook group, and they're like, yeah, they're recklessly spending it, but I'll still get it.
The thing is, for me, you know what I'm like. I'm a cheap person. And my issue that I'm having when it comes to stuff like this is I have to justify the purchase more than ever now.
You understand spending versus investing.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be calling – there's some people who are frugal. And there's some people who are strategic. That's a difference.
Yeah, and that's kind of the issue that's going on with stuff like this. I would never make, like, I'll use Fallout 76 as a big thing. People mm-hmm. pre-ordered this game. They knew that the game was looking terrible, wasn't on a great engine. I'm sitting back going, I'll get it when it's pre-owned.
Yeah.
And they're expecting to invest time on an MMO mm-hmm. that's not complete.
Yeah.
That's buggy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the amount of money you're going to invest, $60 for this, you'll be like, you know what? No.
Yeah. I mean, I did the same thing, but the opposite happened with WWE 2K19, because remember last year you guys heard me like bitch and moan about that game so much.
My brother actually bought that recently for the Switch, and I went, why?
Well, you know what? To that credit now, it's a much more playable game than it has been when we first got it. They've fixed the bugs enough for it to be playable and to do what we needed to do, but the frame rate is still insanely questionable and bad. But 2K19, I thought it was going to – I'm like, I'm protesting it. I'm not spending a full amount of money on this. And I just got it recently when it was on sale. Because I'm like, I'm not spending full money for the crap they put myself and people through. The customer service sucked last year.
Yeah.
And I hated to admit it, but I just did a review on it, and it's actually a really damn good game. This may be the best of the best.
What, 2K19?
Yeah, this is maybe the best that Yuke's and 2K has done together.
Still haven't bought it yet. I'm going to wait till it comes out on gold.
Wait. Honestly, you're going to absolutely – I think you're going to love the improvements on it, but you can wait. Until it maybe gets like even $19.99 at this point. No, trust me when I tell you, it's the I really, and you're gonna probably blow up when I say this. It's maybe the best thing I've played since Bring the Pain.
Mm.
And even furthermore, I'm even saying this furthermore to No Mercy. And that's saying a lot, because their story mode was the best story mode I've ever played in years for a wrestling game. I mean, and the creative suite, that's always been their, you know, bread and butter and strength. But this story mode was unbelievable for them. it wasn't the best game, like, story mode I've ever played in a game. But for a wrestling game, for them, outstanding. I was blown away by this. So, yeah, I would definitely say give it a go and give your own review of that, too. So, moving on to other news. We got one week from today. Elseworld is coming. Are you excited for this?
Oh yeah, definitely. I've enjoyed the current storyline with the Flash. The current Arrow storyline's gotten a lot darker.
I mean, they're Flash and Arrow last season, if you remember, they kind of fell a little bit off. Like Arrow to me was good. It was okay, but at the end it got really good. And then the Flash, it was kind of with the DeVoe storyline, it was like. A lot of people couldn't get down on that, but this season, yeah, I agree. You're right. Both of them are back up and running. So, do you know anything as far as what this is clearly about with Elseworld?
Apparently, they are assuming each other's roles in it. That's as far as I know. And there's a big evil coming.
Yeah. Are you a DC reader?
Yes, I'm. DC's actually my number one comic book company right now. Marvel slipped badly when it came to
for years now.
Yeah. So I'm only now picking it up again, yeah. But there's a lot of questionable things I don't like, but then killing off Old Man Logan. The Return of Wolverine, I don't mind it, but it just seems a bit too, I wouldn't say ridiculous. I'm waiting to see what the rest happens with the story. They're rebuilding the X-Men. They've killed off the majority of the Inhumans because, as comics explained, said Inhumans suck. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it. But at the same time, you know, it's DC have more polarizing stories, better characters. Everything is better written.
It has been for quite some time. I mean, like,
apart from the new Superman stuff,
yeah.
I don't like.
I really hated the fact that they took away Super Sons, though. I really enjoyed that book.
Oh, no, they've done it. They're still doing it.
Oh, they still...
just done out to a new name, yeah.
What is it now?
It's The Amazing Super Sons.
Oh, okay. I'll settle for that. Same artist?
Same artist.
Oh, okay. I need to jump back on in. I really enjoyed that book.
It's basically... it's one of those that I just want to sit there and go, what are those? It's one of those books that I'm enjoying. I'm enjoying everything right now. Like, the new Hulk is great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm enjoying Batman and watching him going down the rabbit hole right now,
yeah,
in terms of Bruce Wayne's progression.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's my question, because in relation to Elseworld, there is a big bad guy coming, and some people recognized him. Do you not recognize it was an African-American-looking alien do with like multiple mohawks, you know, in his hair?
I don't know. Never seen him before. Yes. He's their version of the Watcher.
Okay.
What they're called? Damn it. There was a word. They originated from Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah, that's what's brought on somebody to say that like Crisis may be coming.
Yeah.
Because of this guy's appearance, so you know, it may be more evident that this is that it's going to be happening. And your predictions right now on what do you think this is? Do you think this is possibility of? Because we had two phenomenal crossovers so far, Crisis on Earth X being the better of the two so far. Do you have high hopes that this may supersede that or be just as good?
I don't know. I've got to see it to believe it. It's got John Wesley Shipp as the original Flash from the 90s TV show.
Oh, yes. That was a kicker for me.
it's one of these situations where I think it's got potential to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I feel that CW have the danger of messing up with and relying on is that they keep relying on these crossover events. They need not to. They need to make sure that they have a good story in place. Luckily, they have.
Yeah, I was about to say, I felt they did with...
I'm enjoying everything so far, including Supergirl. Supergirl's just vicious. Dude, even though
Supergirl, to me, is the best of the three.
Or four, I have a problem with Manchester Black, by the way.
You told me, but you want to talk about that?
Yeah, basically his accent is not a Manchester accent. He goes from Liverpool to a standard London general English accent. Secondly, the way that he's portrayed,
yeah,
is they're trying to make him out to be this big Punisher-like vigilante.
Yeah, he's not done it. He has powers, if I'm correct, right?
He does. He has like telepathy powers. If there's a Superman book that you could read where they were living on this farmland, and it's recent, it's actually part of Rebirth.
Yeah.
And he manipulates Superman's son and everyone in the town and starts using his telepathy to kind of... He's someone on the same level as Superman,
yeah,
in terms of powers, right? He went toe-to-toe with the Man of Steel. This guy, literally Supergirl, if she was having a bad day, she could just flick him, kill him instantly. So that's why one of the reasons I don't like they've depowered him. It's like they've used Manchester Black for the name only. And they're trying to give him some of the similar convictions. And I think what they're going to try and do is the testing that they've got going on and giving people superpowers.
Yeah.
That he's going to end up getting them.
It's possible. I mean, right now it does come off very Punisher-esque. And
yeah,
in a sense that now, if you notice in the last episode, his shirt is now a sheet of armor with the Union Jack flag on there.
Yeah,
it's all metal. It's like it's all metallic or like a shield. It's a form of armor now, not more than a t-shirt.
Yeah, it's, as I said, I don't like his character. I think I don't care that they've decided to cast him as a black guy.
Yeah,
no issue with that.
Right.
I just think that they could have got a better actor for the role because it looks like the guy who's playing him has no idea what he's doing.
And here's the funny part. To the untrained eye, that being the United States and majority of us, we had no idea. We just know that this guy has an accent and they call him Manchester Black. And it was like, okay, let's just go.
Yeah, it's like, basically, it's like they went, that's the way Constantine speaks. Let's get everyone to speak like Constantine.
And give him a trench coat at that.
Yeah.
And it's funny, too, because I remember...
Because the new Legends character as well, they're allowing the actress who was playing Vixen, they're allowing her to use her natural English accent,
mm-hmm.
which is hilarious.
The show, I love it. People need to stop sleeping on that show. And
the show's great. I love it.
I call it a superhero party.
Yeah, it's funny as hell. It's a lot more lighthearted this season, which is great.
Oh, I love it. I love it. There's not one season I didn't love.
Yeah. You know.
But yeah, I am absolutely looking forward to it. Seeing what Superman is going to be doing. He's returning, like you said, the 90s Flash is making a comeback. What great fanfare for those who watch that series. And if you haven't watched that series, go to CWC. They got the entire 90s version there. And that was one of the most... It was a very big cult following back then because it was one of those shows that like... Wow, this is actually good. when there wasn't actually good comic book representation out there, that Flash season was really, really good. And it's great that they brought him back. And I love the homage that they pay on these shows, bringing Linda Carter back and all the stuff. And you know, it's really, really great. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna be 3 days instead of four because it's not gonna be associated with Black Lightning nor Legends for some odd reason, but. Speaking of Black Lightning, do you want to or expect to see them doing a crossover anytime soon?
I hope so.
Because they did mention Arrow and Flash on that show, which led me to believe that they are going to actually, I think they need, I would love to see, I would love to, it's more to Flash especially because Oliver is really jaded and he gets it. I think sometimes Barry doesn't get what goes on around the world, and neither does Karen. They did an episode where Kara kept thinking that like racism has died down a bit, but it hasn't. And John had to tell her like, look, you haven't been in the places I have. That racism is still alive in a big way. And that's the thing I love about this is the best season of Supergirl ever, in my opinion, ever. I like this agent Liberty is ridiculously good. I love what they're doing with that character, but. I would love to see Barry because Barry lives in a town that is so bright and almost carefree, like Jitters. The coffee shop always gets wrecked and they just rebuild it back up like it's no problem. But for him to go into the town that Jefferson is in and seeing all the stuff that is going on with Tobias, which, by the way, I know that they're going to do a crossover because I don't know if you remember seeing an episode of Arrow. Renee mentioned Tobias in an episode and said that he was tortured by him. And that led to me believing, I'm like, oh crap, they really are going to cross this over somehow.
They should.
Oh, they absolutely shouldn't. Cause I mean, there's the hook. There was the hook right there. No pun intended was that they had, you know, Renee mentioned Tobias and his torch. I'm like, there's no other Tobias. That can't be a coincidence. I mean, Tobias is ridiculously that dude. I mean, if not for the Kingpin, that dude would have been the most vicious villain out there right now.
Yeah, he's a complete nutcase.
That harpoon, him and that harpoon is crazy. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it next week. So I'm pretty much going to be reviewing that when that comes out a week from now. So looking forward to that. And definitely last bit of news I want to talk about. And it is this Thursday. December 6th, I can't believe December already. December 6th, the 2018 annual Game Awards is coming back. Have you watched any of those in the previous years?
What are they? Sorry?
Yeah, the Game Awards.
Oh, Game Awards, no. There's a reason, because I think it's a bunch of trumped up crap.
Actually,
I think that a lot of people who deserve to win don't, and a lot of it is just due to more hype for titles. The one thing I do like about the Game Awards was the fact that they defended Kojima vehemently.
Oh, absolutely. I thought that was a great segment last year.
You know.
Yeah.
What's been going on?
Well, this year, of course, I mean, I actually liked it from a standpoint that it how they do it, because I've had my experience with award ceremonies before, and some of them are definitely sketchy and political, but the way that they handled theirs, I do kind of like the way Jeff Keighley puts it together and makes sure that it's as fair as it could possibly be. And actually, funny thing, Kojima, Reggie from Nintendo, and a whole bunch of other people are part of his committee, which I guess they, you know, consultation committee or whatever, to try to balance out the means of what, you know, it is to really give praise to what deserves it. You know, they have Kojima and all those other really established, you know, people in the gaming industry, you know, work with him. So this thing is heavily, you know, looked after pretty much. And then the judging is based on like about 48 different, you know, gaming media outlets, you know, huge gaming media outlets out there that they're from around the world. So they kind of base it on that too, as far as the voting and all the stuff. And I believe fans are able to vote in their case too. But in this case, I just wanted to go down just like a few bits of the awards to give your take on what you think is going to actually happen here. So I'm going to start with Game of the Year in general. And yeah, this is going to be a big one because, you know, there's particularly two, three that a lot of people have been talking about all year. But let's start. Their nominees for Game of the Year: Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Celeste. Have you ever played Celeste?
No.
Not good. It's like an indie game that's okay, in competition with all this. God of War, which, okay, you know, that's obviously.
That's been out for a while, though, so I don't understand why it's even being mentioned.
Well, it's all within 2018, so it has been in 2018, so it's still, it's definitely marks in.
Okay,
it's just
agreed.
It came at the beginning of the year.
Yeah,
it's kind of like
true.
It's kind of like Black Panther in the Oscars at this point.
Yeah.
We got Marvel Spider-Man, which just came out just at the nick of time of the voting. Monster Hunter World.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Red Dead Redemption, which I knew was going to get picked at the last minute. Red Dead Redemption 2 in here. All right. My thoughts is that I'm being biased. I love God of War. I played it. I beat it. But I'm a Spider-Man fan, so my biased self wants to vote there. However, there's a big possibility that with all the hype with Red Dead Redemption 2 out, mm-hmm, that I think that might get picked. What do you got?
I would say Red Dead Redemption 2, mm-hmm, in my opinion. It's got critical acclaim and praise. It's making a lot of money for Rockstar.
The highest
and
reviews, too.
Yeah, with the online mode as well, it's probably going to make a hell of a lot of money. So I'm seeing that. And plus, a lot of games this year have been really bad.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of controversy this year is ridiculous.
Yeah, that is, yeah.
So I also, Forza Horizon 4, I'm currently enjoying that right now. It's one of my favorite games to play.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the fact that it has, if you put RPG elements in anything, yeah, I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So because you can own like businesses, buy cars, sell cars, and also compete in races, earn money, it's so good. So in my opinion, it's a great, great game and a great find. So if I would go for Game of the Year, I would literally, if Red Dead wasn't out this year, I would have said it would be, should have gone to Forza Horizon, in my opinion. But that's because I'm enjoying it. It put the Xbox back on the map.
Right. And surprisingly, there's really, I mean, that's an exclusive to Xbox, right?
Yeah.
Like, that game has been out for years. They keep evolving on that the same way that they used to with Gran Turismo.
But that's the thing. They've evolved on it. They haven't. It's not like the 2K sports games where they just throw out the same game with a different coat of paint.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty much a different game to the game that they've had.
Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying that, and that was released actually a couple of months ago, but I managed to get it on Game Pass for free, which. And I have to admit, Game Pass has totally changed the game.
Hmm.
And also, as we saw how Microsoft cleaned up at E3,
mm-hmm.
you know, how basically they've kind of stepped it up this year.
Yeah.
But yeah, for Game of the Year, I would totally say that game, just because the fact I enjoy it loads.
Right.
Yeah, that's literally it for me.
Are you not surprised? Really else are you giving you the list that I gave? That they selected. Are you surprised that no first party AAA games from either like Nintendo, Sony, or Microsoft has been on here? And like, what does that say?
No, because third parties are the thing is, we're getting better quality for MIDI developers now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we are.
And with the decline of AAA developers, like what's happening with Bethesda, with the Fallout titles, with basically stuff that's going on with EA,
mm-hmm.
we're getting a lot more publishers screwing up now because they're trying to overload their stuff with microtransactions instead of actually looking towards making a great game.
Which,
and
by the
indie
way,
developers.
I forgot to mention to you, 2K19 is voided of the microtransactions. Like everything is so in-game now. So you'll be happy to know that too.
And that's the great thing about it. And I think as fans, we're getting a lot more of a vocal voice this year.
Yeah. Thank goodness. And we could have always had. I've always said we could have. We just don't at times. And, you know, look what happens when you do. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, this year has been evident in that. I mean, from that aspect, even to the political aspect too. I mean, we decided to have a voice this year, which is great, and we need to keep that going to get better quality of everything. So,
yeah,
best narrative, they got Detroit Become Human, which I played and blown away by the story, the narrative of this. God of War again is being nominated for this. Life is Strange 2, Marvel Spider-Man again, Red Dead Redemption. This is a hard one for me. I haven't played Red Dead Redemption. It looks like a great story going on there. I play God of War, got a great story. But to me, if I compare it to other God of War stories, it's fair at best. Spider-Man, it is what it is with that one. But I got it. My Detroit Become Human really did something for me, man. It was really moving to me.
But again, it's kind of fallen off because I haven't done much with it after to capitalize.
That is very true. There was no DLC or anything, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, at least with Spider-Man, you're seeing like tons of new DLC. The game's got a lot of longevity in it as well. Yeah. It's rewrote how you saw a superhero game.
Yeah.
You know, and literally changed the game. It took what Infamous did and made it like a million times better. So
you ain't lying.
To me, I would have that above the majority of those. And I think that shows what happens when game developers listen to fan outcries and say, right, what's not working?
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to make this work?
Now,
how can we make this work?
Not only that, Mike, the one thing I have to take in consideration, I mentioned this before, this Spider-Man story was not only great, but it actually rivaled the movies. So, I mean, that to me was even, like, extraordinary.
And the story is so great to the point that they put the character into the spider in the new Spider-Man thing.
Yeah.
Into
the Spider-Verse, right?
Spider-Geddon.
Oh, it is a Spider-Geddon.
It's a sequel.
The new series?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
But it doesn't have Peter in it. It has Doc Ock in it this time.
Wow.
There's a character in it called Man of Spiders as well, where it's basically spiders who think they're Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And I'm making a superhero called Man of Spiders. It's brilliant.
So, yeah, I honestly want to root for that because I was just blown away by that. And I was like, I love Homecoming. I love the original Raimis. But this felt like the Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man 3 that they were trying to make in the studios in Hollywood. And it never came into fruition. And they managed to make it on the game. And it was extremely successful. And again, like you said, the DLC with Hammerhead and Black Cat and all the stuff, and God knows what we're about to get into on the third one and coming to, at the end of this month. I am at all with this one. So hopefully, at least hopefully Spider-Man gets one award win out of this.
I hope it does. I literally think that the studio deserves it for rewriting the superhero genre and for making something technically and physically beautiful. And they also ripped people who were going on about the puddles.
Yeah.
Where they were talking about that fake DLC that can make you have loads of puddles.
I mean, if not even just for that, for what Yuri Lowenthal has done in the role of Spider-Man, like he, in my opinion, I can't wait till I can get him on the show. What he's done with this character now is in the same realm of what Kevin Conroy has done with Batman and with Peter Cullen has done with Optimus Prime. I think that he's nailed it. He's nailed
it. Mark Hamill with the Joker.
And Mark Hamill with the Joker, exactly. He nailed the hell out of that role. I mean, like, I don't want to see anybody else do it. Besides,
well, it's made me more interested in seeing Into the Spider-Verse now. It's literally like, because I saw that and I played through Spider-Man and thinking, okay, this is a great game. Mm-hmm. And then watching Into the Spider-Verse, I'm like, I want to see what else they can do with the character because it's made me want to see more.
Yeah, I tell you what, I pray that they get Miles in the game.
Well, they did.
Well, no, he's in the game, but not actually, because if you've played the DLC, they have conversations throughout the entire both DLCs so far, and he's supposedly training him. And it almost seems like they're leading into getting him to wear the suit and you being able to control him, to play as him. And we don't know what's coming down the line with the third DLC as of yet, but I'm having my fingers crossed that we're actually going to get him to be able to swing around with Spider-Man and be able to do the Venom Blast or whatever like that, because that would be awesome.
Yeah, and I think I want to see a lot more what his character can do. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to do that, and they're going to layer it out in the next game. Yeah. And they're going to give Miles his own kind of... I think they're going to give him kind of a Robin-like situation where he's like Spider-Man's partner.
Yeah.
Which I like that. I love that idea. And I think him training Miles to take up the mantle with him is a great idea.
I can't wait. The way that they played everybody in was just beautiful. I even love this version of Mary Jane too. I absolutely love. I think this is so great. This version of her is great for this, you know, this generation. I mean, her demeanor, her approachability.
They took everything good from the Amazing Spider-Man movies about Gwen Stacy. And yes. Also, like, the Gwen Stacy in the comics. And they just filtered it into Mary Jane to make her not just another victim.
Agreed.
With a beautiful body.
Agreed. I mean, she's a Lois Lane character now, but still, I'm cool with it. I'm very cool with it in this case. Best action game. And this is going to be interesting because there's, you know, going through the ACMG Facebook group, I hear this a lot. We got Call of Duty. We got surprisingly, Dead Cells is in here. I actually have Dead Cells, and that is a... amazing game. I didn't know that. I didn't realize they were gonna vote that in. Destiny Forsaken, Destiny 2 Forsaken, Far Cry 5.
I love that game, and I think Nolan North did a really good job portraying Clyde.
He does no wrong.
Yeah, because it was Nathan Fillion's role when he does his best impersonation of Nathan Fillion. And he gets a double paycheck as well. So,
He's
like, he voices two characters in the game, including Forsaken. But I loved it. I like the whole reason I bought the Destiny bundle recently was because of Forsaken.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for some new DLC to come out before I start picking that game up again. But it gave me hours of game time. I enjoyed every minute of it. And they really improved upon something that they kind of did wrong with the Fallout 76. But basically, the one thing I think that a lot of these companies need to take away from, and one of the reasons I think Forsaken is probably not going to win an award right now, is they keep throwing these games in broken.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep trying to concentrate on, as I said, microtransactions. So when the fans outcry and backlash, they try everything they can to defuse the situation and then eventually give in and make them the game that they want to have. And then when the game does get good, people are they're likely inclined to actually go back and go, you know what, let's give it a try. So the fan base doesn't grow again. Activision's like miserable right now because Destiny's not performing the way that it should do. So they're not even sure if a Destiny 3 is going to be coming.
But that's always been the problem since they had problems with Destiny since the jump, since the very first one. Remember, That one.
Yeah, but this has been entirely bad.
Yeah,
this one's been entirely bad. They scrapped the entire game.
Yeah.
And then finished the base game within 6 months.
Like a whole rush.
And it was a 2-year project. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they completely destroyed what they should have actually had in terms of the game itself, and it's a shame. Yeah. Because I felt like Destiny is a really, really good game. And anyone who hasn't played it yet, you should. At least the base game is free right now. Yeah. Play it. You'll enjoy it. I love the stories. Most of the DLC is way too short, though. And right. Forsaken does make up for it by giving you a bigger story, new threats,
yeah.
And a more... and expands the universe without you having to go and look up on an online thing.
I mean, I've heard great praise about that game as well. I mean, Far Cry 5 is also nominated, and Mega Man 11, I think, is just thrown in there. I love Mega Man 11, don't get it twisted, but...
it's cut and paste like a Mega Man game.
You know what you're getting out of that, you know? Yeah. But for what it's worth, it's one of my favorite Mega Man games ever at this point.
The playtime, though, is a bit short.
It is short. I think that's what it falls under. I think it's going to be, considering Dead Cells, I'm telling you, if you haven't played that game, it's crazy. The way they put it together is crazy. I would say that can be the surprise win, but I think it's going to be between Call of Duty and Destiny 2. I'm only basing that on because of how much I hear about those games from a variety of different people. On social media and everything. Like, I think it'll be down to them too. Dead Cells, if it wins, I think there's an artistic integrity purpose as to why that won, because what that game has done, it's I can't describe to you, it's an enigma of a game. It's an action game, it's a Castlevania style game, and a Metroid style game, but it does something totally different than what you've ever, I mean, what they were able to do with this. It's just amazing what they do. It absolutely, I do believe it deserves to be nominated in this case, but yeah, I'm thinking Call of Duty or Destiny might take that run from Ace. What do you think out of this bunch?
I can't see Dead Cells picking it up.
I don't see it either. Like I said, it'll be a surprise dark horse thing if it does.
Yeah, I think to me it's got to be a AAA title that picks it up.
Yeah.
In terms of titles, I don't know. It's too close to call, really. Because when games have been good, they've been absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
When they've been bad, they've been really bad to the point where you can't see it. And I'm bamboozled. I can't give you an answer, to be fair.
That's a throw up.
Yeah.
All right, two more categories, and then we're going to cut to our talk topic. But best action adventure game. Again, we got Assassin's Creed Odyssey. We got God of War. We got Marvel Spider-Man. We got Red Dead Redemption 2. And we got Shadow of Tomb Raider. I've played two of these games. Assassin's Creed, I haven't heard too much about Assassin's Creed. I heard it was a good game, but I haven't heard anybody like blow up and make a big deal out of this game, per se. God of War, I like God of War, but I like the old way of playing God of War as opposed to this Gears of War style, you know, back panel camera type style that they do. So I'm a little taken back. Spider-Man, of course, the fact that I played that game twice and beat that game twice speaks volumes of what I thought about the gameplay and how I could just swing around. Sometimes I'll just play it just to go around New York City because I haven't been to New York City in ages. So I need to see what changed.
Yeah.
But again, Red Dead Redemption 2 may play a factor in this too, because
I think it could clean up, in my opinion, because I think due to the hype and everything that people are getting about it, the fact that people are still talking about it after they've even completed the game, and with the new online mode,
mm-hmm.
it's gonna pick up a few awards.
And I think the open world aspect too. I mean,
yeah.
Like, that plays a big factor because the open world is kind of similar to what Final Fantasy 15.
Yes.
Sense, where it's just like there's no loading time. I mean, neither was Spider-Man 2. I mean, Marvel Spider-Man, but there's no loading time or whatnot, and you're just going through everywhere, and you feel like you're just traveling for miles, much like you did with Breath of the Wild as well.
Yes.
And that always plays a. And I've seen some really funny things come out of this game too, like a woman get ran over by a deer. Which was like, I don't think it was supposed to happen, but apparently she stopped. Like, what happened was they were on her way, like doing an Oregon Trail or something like that, and a woman stopped her in a, on the road out of the blue, and she was talking. All of a sudden, a deer just came and ran her over, and he just kept going. I was like, wow. I've seen some strange things, even from what you posted.
Yeah, including the stuff like about the woman being dragged in front of a train and eaten by an alligator and stuff, and then people getting an uproar about it because they're like, that's anti-feminism. This guy's YouTube account needs to be shut down. I'm it's a freaking game.
Dude, it's Rockstar. You need to, like, they're not doing anything different that they haven't done before.
It's like, take a chill pill, man.
I really hate the fact that, like, we're in this generation now where we're trying to weigh out, you know, what is appropriate or what's not, or what we will accept or what not. But it's scaring creative, you know, creative people like Rockstar from hesitating from doing some really good gaming and game creativity. This is, we living at a crazy time right now. This is amazing.
Yes, I agree.
I think you should wait to come to the U.S. after 2020.
It has to happen eventually.
I know, but you're literally going into the belly of the beast in an inferno right now.
And I wouldn't have it any other way. This is how I've lived my life. I've always gone for a sink or swim, and I've always swam.
We're going to have you running out like David Bowie's I'm Afraid of Americans.
Or probably I'm going to be like the police, you know, Englishman in New York. Exactly. Oh, I'm an alien. I'm an illegal alien.
So the last category, and this is my near and dear, best fighting game. Surprisingly, the shortest category, the shortest selection of games of them all. So to the point that they've added Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle, Dragon Ball FighterZ, Soul Calibur 6, and of course Street Fighter 5 Arcade Edition, which you got to most, some people are thinking like, well, didn't they win last year? True, but they totally recreated their entire game.
Hands down, they're going to win this year.
I think they're, well, you could easily say that, but Dragon Ball FighterZ is going to give them a run for their money. I truly believe that that's a possibility that Dragon Ball FighterZ can slip up right from under them and take that. You got to think from a standpoint that, like, from EVO's standpoint especially, that was one of the most popular games other than Street Fighter V that year. It was the most registered game in EVO, you know, and if aside from Street Fighter V. But not only that, the game is a full experience that only took five, six gigs to make. That's an amazing accomplishment, considering like you got Soul Calibur, which is like 30 gigs. You got Street Fighter, which is like about like 50 gigs, which has about the same lengthy storylines as Dragon Ball FighterZ does. It has the most intense gameplay that you could possibly have, that Marvel versus Capcom Infinite one is we should have gotten from there. I can easily agree with you to say that Street Fighter Arcade Edition, because of what they did with the game, they totally revamped it. They gave us the arcade mode that I think they superseded our expectations of what we wanted from the arcade mode in that game. And it's still.
And they always said that they were going to do that. They always said that they were going to build upon it. And I think they did it right. They gave us a base game that wasn't very playable, but at the same time, they gave us tons of free content.
Yeah.
And made sure that, you know, they would basically get it all done.
And I think that's the way to, and until like they consider doing a 6 possibly, which I think will be for like maybe 1-2 years, maybe. I think this game more than enough suits itself. It's done a hell of a lot, like you said. I mean, and I like that games are doing it now. You don't have to. I wish consoles would do the same thing, because I don't know how far we're going to get in the console game evolution of a console to the point that like we're going to notice any differences here, because we barely knew any differences between PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4 at this point. We're just now getting to that point of seeing some, more frame rates and all this stuff going on, but. How much more are we going to get? But the same thing goes with this game, too, is like they're doing so much with it. And yeah, I think just because that they're still giving in this game and they're still providing different continuity in this game, it's a big possibility. But I would not be surprised if Dragon Ball FighterZ will come up out of the blue and take it. I will not be surprised at it at all. So, but, you know, I love Street Fighter, and people in our Facebook group still play Street Fighter heavily. So that speaks volumes for itself. So, yeah, I can definitely see that from there. But, again, the Game Awards is coming December 6th this Thursday, which is the eve of Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. Are you ready for that?
Yes.
I am so eagerly. Did you pre-order it? Are you getting a physical? Or?
I haven't pre-ordered. I don't pre-order. There is a reason. I am going to wait, even though Nintendo games don't go down in price for some reason.
It doesn't. Well, actually, you know what, surprisingly, and I don't know if this has anything to do with Ubisoft, the one with the rabbits actually went on sale for Black Friday.
How much?
$29.99, believe it or not, which is the lowest I've ever seen anything involving Mario, ever.
That is actually pretty cool. I might pick that up.
Yeah, it's still on sale now, so I would grab it while you can before they go back and hike that thing.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right. Everything else involving Mario or Zelda does not go down in price.
No. Even if it's like speaking of Switch, by the way, Pokemon, my God, such a great game.
Oh, you mean Let's Go?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I literally, and the fact that it connects to Pokemon Go,
I brought over a
ton of Pokemon.
Isn't it such a love letter to like the first game? The first
few. Yeah, to the first three games, mm-hmm. red, blue, and yellow.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they did everything that they wanted. I feel like they did everything that they wanted to do in the original game, but didn't, especially adding Jesse and James and Meowth into the game, finally.
Yes, it was great. They took parts of the anime and added that with parts of the games. That worked. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they took away the Safari Land and changed it with Pokemon Go Land.
That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah.
I knew something was missing.
They basically done it so that you can take your Pokemon Go, attach it to your Switch, and then transfer all your Pokemon from your Switch from your Go onto the Switch, but it's only the Kanto ones. But I was able to transfer my Alola ones as well.
Awesome.
So the Alola ones of the Kanto region Pokemon, which is great.
That and you can't ride a bike anymore.
Yeah, I was running everywhere. But I also found a way to actually get to Fuchsia City when I had free gym badges.
Yeah.
So I was able to get there before I was supposed to.
Because you already had it on Go?
No. I basically, there's, you know, the guy who wants a tea, the security guard?
Yeah.
Once you give him the tea, it opens up the access to all the areas.
Right.
So once you get to Fuchsia City, there's a huge load of people you've got to fight before you go there.
Mm-hmm.
I had Charizard. So when you take him out of his Pokeball, you're on his back.
Yeah.
So he's flying. So he flies over every single person you're supposed to fight. And I end up in Fuchsia City. So, that was kind of clever. Hope they don't patch it.
So, yeah, definitely. But, yeah, that's coming. Super Smash Brothers is coming next week. I am so stoked for this. This will be the Smash Brothers I've always wanted, because now it has a story mode and there's an answer to all these damn hands coming at you every game. So, and it just looks like it's going to be so much more of what, something for everybody that everybody wanted from this game. I'm so looking forward to this. So, get ready for that. And that will do it for this version of What's New in the World of ACMG. We're going to take a break, come back, and we're going to talk about where Stan Lee stands in the history of American writers. We're going to do that right after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dak Xavier Josiah, the host of ACMG Presents Talk Time Live, the podcast. You want to catch up with all of our podcast shows and hear from some of the hottest names in all of anime, comics, movies, and games, such as...
This is Miley Flanagan, the voice of Naruto.
This is Stephanie Shea, the voice of Sailor Moon.
This is Ruben Langdon, the voice of Ken Masters and Dante from Devil May Cry.
Hey there, this is Kyle Hebert, the voice of Ryu from Street Fighter V.
This is Chris Battle, character designer of Teen Titans Go.
Here's your chance to check out all of that and more on Talk Time Live. TalkTimeLive.com provides all of our ACMG content with new and previous episodes, exclusive interviews, articles, and much more. Visit TalkTimeLive.com and let us help you learn to let go, live life, and love all things ACMG.
Talk Time Live.
This is Stephanie Shea, the voice of Sailor Moon, and in the name of the moon, you are listening to ACMG Presents Talk Time Live.
Do it.
And now it's time for our top topic of the week. Ready? Fight!
All right, folks, we are back with our talk topic of the week, and we're going to talk about Stan Lee once again. Of course, we have the unfortunate news that he passed away some 2 weeks back, and well, it was Veterans Day for that matter too, which was really interesting.
Also, he passed away at a very comfortable age, like 95 years old. That's that you've done and saw so much, you know.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I've been saying that for so many times. Especially, I have a thing. If you die maybe like our age, or even an earlier age than that. Yeah, you kind of I feel that you could mourn, because you never got a chance to really know what you could have done in this world.
Yeah, that's kind of what it's my greatest fear is dying and not knowing if you left an impact.
Right. Whereas you get a guy like Stan Lee, who not only got to see and do what he's done without his whole entire life, he's fought. It's not like he just did it.
He wanted to work in the movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
He managed to cameo in every single Marvel movie mm-hmm. to date, and even a DC one.
And exactly. And then we're going to see more as, and you know, going further down the road because he prepped for this. But
and the that's the thing with him. And also, he took a company that never was supposed to succeed. It was the little engine that could, that was bought by a big Wall Street magnate
mm-hmm.
who just wanted it to print money, and he turned it around. He went from being the coffee guy and the mm-hmm. gopher
yep.
to being the managing editor and producer of Marvel Comics.
Yeah, more titles than that, too, for that. You know, and he was just a kid when he was doing it.
So. Yeah. He is a man who became the face, and he always will be the face
mm-hmm.
of a company that he was the T-boy in. Yep. You know what I mean?
And take note, here's the other thing, too, that you need to count. It was during the Great Depression.
Yeah, and you want to talk about the American dream as well, man. That's the American dream.
His father didn't even have a job at the time, reportedly. Like, he managed to get this job through his family in Timely Comics and then worked off from there. And then, you know, Jack Kirby and I forgot the other guy that left with him. You know, they left, so he had to take over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just it ran it. You know, that's... The fact I don't think people understand, especially the generation today. I don't think they understand how really bad the Great Depression was back then. And for him to be able to, you know, he's been hustling hard ever since. He is the epitome of hard work. You know, and I always got to saying you got to work hard to have fun, and nobody had more fun or worked any harder than Stan Lee from then to now. So when you get a guy like Bill Maher, who normally, and he does some stupid stuff at times, but for the most part, he does his homework. For him to make stupid comments in regards to a man who's done so much, not just from a cultural, not just from like a cultural standpoint, from a political standpoint, from you know, like civil rights, from an opportunistic standpoint, that he's of the opportunities that he's given, not only just himself, but not just everybody, but just everybody who wanted opportunity or gave representation to. I thought it was so wrong for him to do, and so immature and irresponsible for him to do, to give off such a bitter comment like he did. And I had rants for weeks on end since I've read that article, which, by the way, did you read the article?
I've got it in front of me.
Just out of curiosity, would you mind reciting that statement?
Okay. Let's do it in my best American accent.
Yeah,
the guy who created Spider-Man.
If you give it in your accent, it might actually sound appropriate, so go ahead, do it.
Okay. The guy who created Spider-Man and the Hulk has died, and America is in mourning, deep, deep mourning for a man who inspired millions to, I don't know, watch a movie, I guess. Someone on Reddit posted, I'm so incredibly grateful I lived in a world which includes Stan Lee. Personally, I'm grateful I lived in a world that included oxygen and trees, but each to their own. Now, I have nothing against comic books. I read them now and then when I was a kid, and I was all out Hardy Boys, but the assumption everyone had back then, both adults and the kids, was that comics were for kids. When you grew up, you moved on to big boy books without the pictures. But then, 20 years or so ago, something happened. Adults decided they didn't have to give up kids' stuff, and so they pretended comic books were actually sophisticated literature. And because America has over 4,500 colleges, and which means we need more professors than we have smart people. Huh. So dumb people get to be professors by writing these titles like Otherness and Heterodoxy in the Silver Surfer. And now, when adults are forced to grow up things like buy auto insurance, they call it adulting and act like it's some giant struggle. I'm not saying we're necessarily gotten stupider, but the average Joe is smarter in a lot of ways than he was in, say, 1940s. And when a big night out, there was the Three Stooges short and the Carmen Miranda musical. The problem is, we're using our smarts for stupid stuff. I don't think it's huge stress to suggest that Donald Trump could only get elected in a country that thinks comic books are important.
Just hearing that, you reciting that, and that word from word, it really is so upsetting. And even worse, that he even went back on to Larry King and tried. Everything about what he said just came off so condescending.
It is condescending.
It is extremely condescending.
It's making my skin crawl. And the problem is, this is the problem not just with America, but with the world in general. Entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm entitled to tell you what is appropriate and inappropriate. That's not the way things work.
Right.
You have so many people, so many adults reading J.K. Rowling books that are meant for children. Do we complain? No. Because they get lost in a world. It's the same thing that you do with comic books. It allows you to get lost in a world. Gaming, same thing, lost in a world.
Well, I mean, cartoons. Even, I mean, it did the same thing for Shakespeare and Twain and Hemingway.
Yeah. And they allowed you to take something. And that's the one thing you take away as an actor. One thing I learned from drama school was you are setting up a world for people to get lost in and immerse themselves in. They want to feel viscerally what your character is doing, what they're saying, every word, every emotion that they invoke. And the problem with Bill, and he's acted before, I believe. He's done a few movies. And he's also done stand-up on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So how he's the fact is he's being extremely condescending because the whole thing screams, I'm smarter than you are.
Yeah.
And the reason why you people that why we have a dumb president who has no idea what he's talking about is because people read comic books. And the problem being is it's not that. The reason why Trump got elected.
It's so many other things than that.
But it's not just the one of the main things is what he's doing right now. Pointing the finger.
Or doing what he hates the most, and that is becoming Trump. Because that's something Donald Trump would do. And the fact that Donald Trump didn't make anything say anything stupid like that, and he did, that says a lot. It's just amazing. You did say the word entitlement, and I extremely agree with that. I also want to add on to that, bitter.
Yeah.
I don't...
And that's the thing. I watched Bill's show.
Yeah.
A couple of times. I believe there's a lot of stuff he says that's extremely condescending.
Yeah.
Including the whole, you know, N-word controversy because he's an idiot. And again, speaking of that, saying this and then going back to that, and he didn't understand what he did wrong until someone had to point it out to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't make you smart, does it?
No. But he has a platform. They provide him that platform, and he feels entitled, and he feels like he has this power to say what he wanted to say and his way goes. And then when things don't go his way, he starts doing bitter blog entries like this. And this is somebody who I think he feels empowered when he is able to, you know, not only voice his opinion, but show his power amongst other things. One of them is endorsing politicians. And when those politicians don't win, I think it's at this point in time, especially now, it's made him more jaded than ever.
But the thing is, for me, now it's become a better time than most. And this is why. The fear mongering is not working anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You have more young people going out to vote. You have more. And I hate to get political about this.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got more people who otherwise wouldn't have a vested interest in politics having a vested interest in politics.
Right.
We may have Trump now in America, and not we, because I don't have that. We have a stupid woman who thinks that she understands what the hell she's talking about and then confesses that she outright lied to get her position. doesn't mean that they're going to have him in 2020.
Right.
One of the things that Trump is afraid of is the fact that people, you've seen the general elections.
Mm-hmm.
More Democrats are being elected in to positions now, more women. More
like I said, our voices have been heard this yes. year, so that's a major thing. I mean, on so many facets, this was one of the facets I was mentioning.
Yeah, there's still dodgy stuff happening, mm-hmm. but at the same time, we're fighting it.
There's a crack in the proverbial ice right now.
Yeah, and the people, most of these people come from comic book groups, from gaming groups.
Yep.
They come from things that have become mainstream now and that we enjoy. And the things that we used to have guys like Bill say to us that we're wrong and that we should be ashamed of, or that we're babies for reading,
right,
have become so mainstream and popular now with the Comic Cons, with stuff that if he was in a superhero movie, he'd be invited to do and sign an autograph.
He was in Iron Man 2.
There you go.
He's mocking someone who created Tony Stark. Yeah, he has a check from Marvel. Okay.
And I don't think they'll invite him back.
At this point,
so if you look at that, if you look at the what he's saying and his statement, it is not a correctly, it's not a factual statement.
There's so much homework that he did not do here, and he's usually,
well, he says it himself. I don't know comic books. I don't.
Why talk about
books.
It? Why even bring this up? Even Kevin Smith was like, he said it best on his podcast. He was like, you know, he took a shot when there was no reason to take a shot at all. Point blank. I mean, there was no reason to do it. There was none, except that he was bitter. Even Larry King, when he interviewed him, when you seen that clip, you saw him interviewing. Even Larry, I think he loved, I think he had major respect for Stan Lee. I think that's why he really forced that question in. He was like, you know, if you really met him, he was a nice guy. He was like, and Bill Maher was like, I'm sure he is, but you know, with his rebuttal to that wasn't even good. It was still kind of said he still lacked merit to it. And if really he did his homework, he would know how much more effective he's been to this country than Bill Maher has just put it in money to endorse a politician. Al Sharpton said it best when he was like, he helped create the minds of others except other people. When Black Panther came out, there were kids who were not just the movie, but I mean not just the movie that just came out, which did a big deal for other ethnicities that embraced that character. But even dating back then, when Stan Lee and created that character, and Steve Ditko created that character, at a time where representation was far revered, where they took a risk. These two Jewish guys took a risk creating this African character in a country that was, you know, really like a very racist heavy country that were like rather lynching or abusing or discriminating. They decided to take a stand. He used a soapbox to voice his opinion, and people read those soapboxes. I mean, now since he passed away, people have been, I've posted a soapbox that he was advocating, you know, equality and stuff like that. He was making his voice heard way before Bill Maher even had a chance, before he was even born.
He was using it at a time when it was acceptable.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And I think Bill Maher doesn't understand that.
Had he really done his homework, that blog would not have made it in. That blog, it just really felt so bitter when it came, after reading that. It just, this guy has probably been in, he's invested in the political world for so many years. Because I remember old Bill Maher. Bill Maher in the 80s, or in the 80s and the 90s, is nowhere near this version. The minute he started taking on, you know, doing the political comedy and doing his own shows and all the stuff, as the years go by, especially now with the turn of events that has happened with the election and everything, I think it made him very bitter. He probably, who knows, he could have lost a lot of money investing in these politicians or whatever and endorsing, and it turned him to the worst, and therefore he's picking on and displacing his anger on the first thing that he sees. Why it had to be Stan Lee, I don't know. But one thing that he mentioned too, I mean, he was talking about sophisticated literature. where does Stan Lee stand among the history's best, you know, Stanley Lieber wanted to be an American, the great American
novelist.
And thanks to his wife, Joan, she made him turn the other way and go about it a different way using the Stan Lee persona to create some of the new modern day mythology that we are all loving now. And we love for the past more than ever the past 10 years of movies. But where do these storylines sit among the what people like Bill considers sophisticated literature? What is more sophisticated because there's illustrations in front of it? Or just the continuity? Now, you've read Shakespeare yourself. I've read, like I said, I've read The Merchant of Venice. I've read Othello. You've read probably everything else from there. Caesar, whatnot. You've read everything from this point. From a comparison and contrasting situation, how much of a contrast is what Stan Lee written as opposed to with, you know, Shakespeare written, or even Twain or Hemingway, even to the standpoint.
Well, during the time with Shakespeare, our borders were closed off, like everyone's borders were closed off. Mm-hmm. And it became literal and critical context. Like he talks about stuff like Romeo and Juliet, for instance, about love and understand the context of love being star-crossed lovers and that people do stupid things like when they poison themselves because their family would never accept them. They talk about blood feuds, losses, and a lot of his stuff came from Italian text.
Right.
So it's from stuff that he could that he managed to acquire. And the same goes for a lot of it. And like a lot of Shakespeare's work, like comic books, isn't relatively new per se. He's taken it. He's adapted it from something else.
From reality. From
stuff that he's read.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and, which, by the way, Stan Lee has said that he's taken some essence from Shakespeare or Frankenstein or what. I mean, Frankenstein was great. The Hulk was created from the idea of Frankenstein and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, and you know, it's like the Fantastic Four were used to combat against the Justice Society. Yeah. Stanley is having his work taught in graphic schools. There's the Marvel Scholarship.
Yeah.
I talk about it as well. Mm-hmm. He's also used to help define storytelling. It's like William Shakespeare when I was doing my English studies.
Yeah.
William Shakespeare was the first thing that they started teaching about.
Right.
When I went to drama school and got my BA in drama and theater arts, by the way, I am an actor with a degree. Mm-hmm. Which is an education, by the way, Bill. So, you know, I basically got that from studying Shakespeare's work, but I also did illustration way back. Yeah. I was going to get my illustration degree before I became a professional wrestler, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And a lot of their stuff was inspired by Marvel. Like his stuff was being taught the art of storytelling, the power of paneling. You know, Jack Kirby's work is being taught at
Stan himself has actually done speaking engagements at colleges throughout the 70s.
Yeah, and a lot of it is because of his way of storytelling. And his way of storytelling is being adapted and used by other writers.
Yeah.
You've got people transitioning from film, TV, to comic books. You've got guys who are professional wrestlers like CM Punk going into comic books.
Yeah.
And everybody is making their way. And the way that people educate themselves and learn about the world is via that medium. It's the same way people learn from Shakespeare.
Yeah.
You can't. To simply knock something is to show your ignorance, in my opinion. It's not to show.
I call it one-dimensional minded.
Yeah. It's like I'm not a big fan of – like I love anime, but I'm not a big fan of anime culture. Mm-hmm. What people use it with and the fact they call each other weebs and weebos and stuff. But I don't understand it. So what I do is I try to find out more about it.
Right.
And I talk to people about it. And I ask what animes I should watch and what they're watching currently. Mm-hmm. So I can help develop an understanding. Because I think the problem is once you stop learning.
Yeah.
And once you think you know everything. Mm-hmm. That's when you'll truly become an unintelligent idiot.
Like you talk about your biggest fear is dying without, you know, thinking that you're doing everything else. One of my biggest fears is getting old and not being able to still adapt. Because that's, yeah, you know, what he did is something I always said, because I've seen it all the time. It's like, I don't want to ever stop learning, even if I turn 70, 80 or whatnot. If I still have the ability, if I don't have dementia or whatever like that, I still want to be able to learn and enjoy what's going on in the world. You know, but the way that he's going is like, and there are people like there are seniors like Stan Lee who have adapted throughout. And that's why he stayed relevant throughout many people's generations at this point, yeah, you know.
He did it without an education.
Yeah.
You know, this is the thing. Like, people don't understand that. A lot of people like, well, you know, back in the day, we used to get jobs and we just did whatever the hell we had to do. Yeah, you know, I've heard that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I always find that the richer people get, the more in a lull they get. Like, the more money they have, the more of a platform and a voice, yeah, the more ignorant they are. And it comes from both sides, the left and the right.
It's not even just pop culture in general as well.
Yeah, but the moment we stop understanding and dissecting and utilizing and working on ways to understand each other and our fandoms and our mediums is the day that we end up losing it touch with reality. And I think Bill has lost touch with reality. And the fact that people think that, you know, like recently they were going that Hillary Clinton is considering running for 2020, right? I sat here and said, there is a reason why people rebelled against Hillary,
yeah,
and put Trump in office. And you have to break down and analyze that in order to understand why he was put in there.
Mm-hmm.
You can't sit there and go, comics are the reason. Because comic books, I have more fun reading comics and playing video games, mm-hmm, than I do immersing myself in real life.
Which reaches the same type of depth and continuity that which you would hear in any, you know, established literature, if you will.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I've read a lot. I do read a lot. I have, like, Shakespeare's four works here.
Mm-hmm.
I also have the Stanislavski Toolkit, which is my Bible, mm-hmm, when it comes to my acting. And I literally have the privilege of working in a job that Shakespeare was a foundation for.
Right.
Back in the days of Shakespeare, or they call it the Jacobean period,
mm-hmm,
acting was considered street work and work for poor people. You know, people were dying.
Right.
And the rich people, the people who were earning money off their vast lands and conning others, would sit there and look at acting as nothing.
Right.
And they would look at performers the same way they would look at that. A lot of people look at prostitutes.
Right.
Seeing how far it's come that you've got the most respected people in the world doing this now, and people like Bill are fortunate to work in that medium.
Mm-hmm. And has, again.
Yeah.
You know.
And he's also hosting his own show, which, again, yeah, is television. It's grown a lot more. And comic books have done that too. It's grown from a medium that people just read for the sake of reading, and it's become a medium that's encompassed all sides of media.
We're a generation that truly understands what value those books had, you know, and does have, and how much depth it was. Because, I mean, when, again, he mentioned the Hardy Boys. He mentioned, you know, condescendingly, you know, he mentioned the Hardy Boys. And yeah. That, to me, right there was just like how far back he was thinking and how old fashioned he was thinking. And he did admit that, like, you know, back in the day. But again, like you said, you can't think that far. You got it. Like, nothing's going to stay the same at all best. It just boggles my mind that he's gotten so developed into that mindset. And I don't know where he was with this.
It shows that he's gotten old.
Yeah.
To be honest.
I don't want to say, that's the thing. I don't want to say old, because old shouldn't be synonymous with.
But it's the case. Like, if you, like, if Matt Groening did that episode of The Simpsons where Grandpa Simpson goes, I used to know what hip was, then hip has become new and scary to me. It will happen to you.
If that's the case, yeah, that's true. I mean, there's a majority that I think
but
that
it's old
be
and
like
set
that
in his ways. You know, right. Like, my kids use an app called TikTok right now, which is like Vine,
mm-hmm,
for kids.
Yeah.
I feel that the app is a useless piece of technology. There's a lot of people, I think, who come from Vines like Logan Paul, who I think are a waste of air. but I've done my research on them. And I've done my research on them, and that's the thing. And a lot of people do become famous for being unintelligent assholes. Yeah. That's something he has hit on that I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
But comic books aren't the reason.
I think that was a scapegoat. Honestly, I really think that was a scapegoat.
Well, it's the reason I think, and this is my takeaway, is reality television has allowed it to become more accessible for people who don't have the biggest brains on the planet to become focal points. The Kardashians, for instance, are a multi-billion dollar industry.
A lot of people believe that it all stemmed from that very moment or time.
Not really. I think Paris Hilton's the real life.
Paris Hilton, yeah, that was a start. That was a definite start. But the boom period,
Jersey Shore.
Paris Hilton was like the Sugar Hill Gang of this whole entire generation. And then you got Kim, who when she made that tape and it became, that was the boom period. And everything, it just felt like everything from that point changed everything. I don't know why it did it, but it felt like it did, and we haven't our society, our ideology, and all that has been the same since. But it's a battle between this new way of thinking and Bill Maher, and other. I hate to say compare Bill Maher to a conservative because he's actually a liberal. But
I know he's a liberal. I know he's a leftist. That's why I said the left and right have this problem because they do.
Because now it's like now there's going to be a third party from liberals and conservatives. They have,
the conservatives are going to sit there and go, look how he treats Stanley. We love comic books. Vote Trump.
exactly. We don't want.
It's the way they. This is the funniest thing. This is the reason why I got so sick because I used to be a big leftist. I'm still liberal, but I used to be a huge leftist. Mm-hmm. Now I'm a centrist, and the reason why.
Well, I've been independent for quite some time. It's like I know the history.
I'm pretty much the same as you, right? So I look at it and I look at arguments. I look at cases and I also look at evidence.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't do that.
Yeah.
A lot of people take for face value what they see on TV or what they hear someone say.
Absolutely. Headlines only.
Stan Lee touched on this when, the X-Men, Ease for Extinction or what was the event with the purifiers? I think it is Ease for Extinction. But, God Loves, Man Kills. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Read that one. But it's a Chris Claremont book. But yeah. Stan Lee was the one who originally created the X-Men as a way to show segregation and the fear mongering that people have for looking at race or gender. Like right now, trans is the big thing that people are looking at. Yeah, and they're like, well, they shouldn't be changing their damn bodies that they own the rights to and they can do whatever the fuck they want with. Excuse the language. And you have that. And the idea was you had this guy who was preaching to people, and it was very similar to the way the KKK did it.
Yeah.
Where they'd be like, they're breeding with our people. They are going to be the reason why we die. They're literally terrorists, but they were saying things in such a context that it allowed people to encompass that fear in everyday people, normal people.
Mm-hmm.
Reason why the Nazis came to play as well. Normal people believed the scare and the hype and the anger and the abuse. And dare I say, I think it's people like Stan Lee who have allowed the next generation to understand things and go, actually, that ain't true.
Right. You're absolutely right. And that's what I think Reverend Al Sharpton pointed out. And it really, I'm glad that they, TMZ interviewed him right about the time when Bill Maher said what he said, because it rivaled immediately, polar opposite of what he should have done. And, he absolutely understood that.
Yeah.
He changed the way a generation thought about us.
He did.
I mean, I'm saying my culture in particular, as African Americans, him doing what he's doing, not even just with T'Challa, but with Luke Cage as well, to some extent, gave us a platform, gave us opportunity, gave us representation, and that's why I was extremely glad to see him, and you knew down the line, especially when his wife passed away in last year, that everybody thought and knew it was like, there's a possibility that this can happen. And they did. There are reports out there that saying he did die of a heart attack, to my knowledge. So there were some heart problems. So, I mean, there was always a saying that, like, you know, when somebody that you love passes away, especially at an older age, that kind of usually transcends to you actually being the one to go next. Yeah. And they, if you've seen any of their footage of those two together, they, you could tell they really, really loved each other from that point. But I was at least glad to see him in the Black Panther movie because he deservingly needed to be praised for that. If not for him and Steve Ditko doing what they did, we wouldn't have got this movie. That this movie would not have been a huge phenomenon in this and around the world.
Stanley was the first one to actually establish Marvel Studios back when it was a cartoon and TV company. Yep. And, you know, he was trying his best to push Marvel into the mainstream.
You know,
it didn't work first time around, but he did it.
Transformers the movie in that studio, right?
Yeah.
So awesome.
And he also did the animated series as well because it was produced by Marvel.
Yep.
The whole look of the Transformers, it came from them.
Yep.
And they were also publishing the books. They had some amazing...
Some of the stories of the old ones.
Do you've seen the time traveling saga where they end up basically... Hot Rod is like strung up on the Twin Towers.
No.
And it's basically... It's Galvatron and Megatron basically transcend time. The two of them team up and take everyone down.
Wow.
It was so... It looked so dark.
The ones I remember, the last Marvel Transformers books I've read was when Grimlock became the leader.
Yeah.
And that was a huge deal because, like... Him taking over as the leader and Prime dying again, and he did the whole Unicron thing all over again. It was like, but it was a twist with this one. I was like, wow, it blew me away.
They allowed them to do something really unique with them, and everybody who's read a Marvel book, and this is the thing, right? Look how open these books were to the point that no one was discriminated. They accepted everybody, and everyone, if whether you're black, white, Spanish, or freaking Turkish, whatever you were, right?
Orientation wise, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
North Star, remember?
Yeah.
North Star for Alpha Flight. Marvel was the first.
Marvel have managed to transcend pop culture to be something where it's ingrained in people's lives. The same thing Nintendo has done. Mm-hmm. Same thing Disney has done.
Yeah.
Right? The reason why Disney is so big is because of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing where William Shakespeare managed to take texts that we wouldn't known about, situations that we wouldn't have understood,
right,
and bring them together. He talked about, like, my favorite Shakespeare play, Macbeth.
Yeah.
He talks about the idea of Macbeth getting these witches, basically telling it's manipulation. So he's manipulated by his witches to say that he'll become the king.
Yeah.
Right. So he was like the Thane of Cawdor. And then Caldor or something like that. And then he moved up and he kills the king. And there's this beautiful soliloquy that he says, "This is a dagger that I see before me, a handle toward my hand. Come, let me clutch thee. I have thee not yet. I see thee still. Art thou not fatal, vision sensible?" He's going mad, right? Mm-hmm. And he's dealing with the fact that he's going to basically stab the king, his best friend.
Right.
In the heart, and then he gets really paranoid. Most films, most stories come and they draw some of their similarities from Shakespeare plays.
Right.
If you've seen a romance novel or a romance movie, or you see a movie where someone's going crazy, they all come from stuff.
That's
from
what that we always material. Say is like, is it very Shakespearean style of, you know, of storytelling or portrayal?
Yeah. The only thing that's lost is now the way that they speak is changed, but the narrative is still
funny,
the same.
Funny thing, like from a wrestling standpoint, that's how I always picture CM Punk. CM Punk and his persona to me was very Shakespearean in how he portrayed his character and how
he was a storyteller.
It was a very great storytelling, but it was a twist of the way it was done was never done before.
Yeah,
and for a guy that was supposed to be a bad guy, but he was supposed to be straight edge, and he's like. But people are shunning him for his beliefs and his, you know, it was just a brilliant way of doing it. And it just felt the way he portrayed that character, the way Phil Brooks made that character, especially during the Raven scene, because on Ring of Honor.
Oh, I love that.
You remember that? Because he did the big speech where when Cabana was about to, you know, joke around and clown, he stopped him and went, you know, with blood on his face. This was the Shakespearean part to me. With blood on his face, he went crazy and told the real reason of why he hated Raven so much. I always go back to that moment. And it was like, I could go and watch this at a play. The same way I would do a Shakespeare play.
But that's the thing. Like, if you see Brecht in plays, Brecht does the same thing. They break the fourth wall all the time. Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, seeing that, we're going to look at like decades from now, and we're going to look at the Marvel movies. And the Marvel movies are the archetypes right now of how an event movie is made.
Yeah.
No one's ever going to do an event movie like the Marvel movies.
Nobody, no.
But
not for years on end.
But everyone's going to try and emulate it.
Yeah, and they have now. And
they've tried.
You see what happened.
They've tried and failed, yeah. But I can literally give you a whole show about like breaking those down and tell you why they failed.
I think the DCW universe is the only ones who mimicked the exact way that Marvel's doing their things for the primetime TV shows and is doing it successfully.
Yeah, because the TV shows should have the way the TV shows are done those are the ways they should have done the movies.
Well, Greg Berlanti is no fool. He's making money because of that.
Yeah, but the idea is behind it, and this is the thing: we can look at those and look at comic books as the way to transcend barriers, to break things, and to also get lost. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the kind of the thing that Bill doesn't get because he's all about. And the thing, he does stand-up comedy. He looks at real life and mocking it. He doesn't look at it from – he sits there and goes, I'm an intellectual. You're stupid if you read comics.
Mm-hmm.
You're not an intellectual if you take something and do the exact thing that intellectuals never do. Intellectuals break things down. They assess them. You just take something and go, I don't understand it, so it doesn't mean anything to me.
Well, so does Chris Rock and so does D.L. Hughley, who all both emerged themselves in politics as well, very articulately and intelligently as well.
Yeah.
But they know the deal. And I don't know if it's because they're both black and they understand the plight and they understand what Stanley has done, but they get it, you know?
Privilege.
Yeah,
that's what you can say it down. It's privilege, and because I always sit there and I always wonder why you have politicians speaking from you who've never had a politician who comes from nothing, and a lot you've seen a lot of it now in America, especially where you had I think the young woman who became she was mayor, was it mayor of New York or was she a governor in New York,
mm-hmm.
Who basically she came from nothing. She wouldn't accept donations from companies. She used funding options from community donations and her own money to bankroll her campaign. She mm-hmm. won. And she was known as the politician that couldn't be bought.
Right.
Right. How do you think that she got those types of values? And this is the thing that I think when you have ignorance, you think you can do whatever you want. It's like the same thing that Trump's guilty of and the same thing that Bill's guilty of right now.
Yeah.
You have ignorance and you think you're untouchable, but eventually it's all going to catch up to you because eventually it will show the things that you don't understand will outweigh the things that you do.
Yeah.
Because we change as a society. And the great thing about comics and still the thing that Stan Lee managed to do and what comics are still doing, Marvel not so much now because they did a bit too much of it, was it was talking about society and finding a way to merge our current narrative in society with what's going on in the comics to educate people.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, when the time is right, they do it right.
Yeah, and the thing is, like as you said, like Shakespeare, Stan has a huge back catalog. He is a pop culture icon. He has so much.
And both were shunned upon for their writing at one point.
Yeah. Well, as I said, because Shakespeare was shunned because he wasn't taken seriously. Because why are you writing plays? Plays were considered the less of the less, you know. Now we have so many stemics of plays of like Broadway. You've got that going on. We have the Shakespeare's Globe over here, which is considered one of the biggest, most premier theatres in the UK.
Yeah.
People come here to see it. Shakespeare's name, despite there is a huge argument whether or not he's a plagiarist or not, mm-hmm. His name is synonymous with acting.
Yeah.
And he's considered now a scholar.
Right.
Whereas Stan Lee by this man is considered a nothing but a child. You know what? And I will say it. I never want to grow up. I'm a 36-year-old man who does not want to grow up. You know?
I think that's the myth of our society today is that, like, it's so much going on right now.
Well, in terms of people like Bill, growing up becomes him.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be an uneducated, and yes, he is uneducated, because the N-word, I'm still not over that whole N-word thing.
And him trying to justify it. I even seen an episode as he tried to, you know, he even brought his friend who just...
Ice Cube had a lot of tolerance for him. He was just like, listen, we're going to get schooled right now. I was just like, thank you. And he's trying to justify himself, and he's like, no, be quiet. Let me tell you why you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's the thing. When you come, it shows your level of ignorance. And I think people getting rolled up, it's not going to help anyone.
I mean, to his credit, he didn't back away from it. He didn't shy away from it.
No, he doubled down.
I give him that credit.
He doubled down and made himself look like a hypocrite because he goes, I don't even read comics.
That's the
thing.
Then
if you don't read on it, why are you talking about it?
You got yourself out of one kick and now you went back into something totally different.
Yeah. It's like I don't watch reality TV.
Yeah.
I don't like the Kardashians. I'm not going to sit there and go, the Kardashians are this, the Kardashians are that, or speak on how dumb they are, because obviously they're doing something right. They're making millions. But at the same time, it's not my field. I'm not going to rile up a bunch of reality TV fans because it's nothing to do with me.
Right.
I'm an actor. I'll tell you about my field. I love gaming. I can talk to you about games all day. I love comic books, and we can talk about comic universes and everything.
Right.
The sure privilege and ignorance that comes from Bill's words are what hurts him the most, because in the end, when we get up here tomorrow, Stan Lee is still going to exist, and he's had a bigger impact on this world than
he's
Bill will ever.
He's going to live longer than all of us. For years on end.
You'll probably have like your great grandkids in 10 generations still talking about Stan. Yeah. No one's going to remember Bill.
No.
And I guarantee that.
I agree. One more question. Well, two more questions, actually, in reference to this. Since you've read both Shakespeare and both Stan Lee's work and Marvel's work, do you have a Marvel Stan Lee story that may rival or compare or even supersede that of what Shakespeare has written?
That's a hard thing to do because, like, Macbeth is my favorite. I'm a huge fan of the ones that got me into comics for the Claremont X-Men run. So the one book I was reading recently was Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
From the Fantastic Four. So I would say maybe the Fantastic Four, just because he could show the family dynamic. Actually, no. Scratch that. Spider-Man. And here's why.
I figured you were going to go there, but yeah.
He made a superhero that I could identify with.
An everyman.
Yeah, I was the geek at school who's getting bullied.
So I was
being beaten up by people on a regular basis. I was being told how stupid I was and to do people's homework.
Right.
I basically was dealing with the stress of everyday life. I had no friends. And I could literally see myself in Peter Parker.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think... And the fact that he's grown and he's still screwing up, I can still identify myself with him.
Still having problems, still trying to pay... Well, I don't... Is he now? Because does he...
Still trying to pay the bills, yeah.
Wait, he's... No, so Parker Industries is gone.
Yeah.
Damn.
He tanked it.
Damn. You know, you kind of wonder if he would have stayed... If Doc would have stayed in that body. Or if he found a way to work with him somehow.
Oh, Doc's screwing up on his own, right? And that's a lot more... Again, it's because of his own ignorance. You know?
But I love the whole Parker Industries thing. I absolutely love that he finally got his piece of the pie, and he well deserved, and he got the new suit.
I felt like they should have continued in that direction, but that's a story for another day.
It's a part of his evolution. I don't think they had to go back to the well of him being, you know, impoverished, if you will, or something, or, you know, low income, whatever. It's just like, all right, we get it, but we want to see eventually him be some type of success doing something that he, you know, now he's like the cast of Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
Where they're scientists, but they're not making any cash in this case. But I agree. Spider-Man is kind of hard not to go to Spider-Man, but also X-Men to that extent as well, because they all. And by the way, Bill Maher is really coming off like Senator Robert Kelly right now. with the way he's acting, because that's how it's kind of how the premise of that character on X-Men was. He's the senator that just didn't he didn't understand it, so he just he made stupid snide comments, and then he helped with the Sentinels and all this stuff. You know, if Bill Maher had that type of power, man, I as a comic book fan, I would be fearing. But you know, you had to. Like, I mean, we could even I would even say like go to the. I would say between the Venom storyline, maybe, or the Green Goblin character, or the Green Goblin saga with Gwen Stacy.
Oh, yeah.
Because you got a man who had to make two decisions. You know, he had to make some decisions, and then upon doing that, you know, the beauty of Peter Parker is that it's all about the decisions, the responsibility. And take note, with great power comes great responsibility. That line alone will last longer than Bill Maher.
Yeah. You know? And that's what I'm saying. It's one of those things where it's just it he doesn't get it. And because he doesn't get it,
he chooses not to get it. It's not that he can't. He chooses not to.
But it's also something that's scary to him. So he uses it and places blame on it. Can we think of anybody else that's done that?
Oh God, yes. And unfortunately it's his worst enemy.
Yeah. And this is the thing, and it's the same goes with any society. If we do not learn from history, we are doomed to repeat it. And that's the problem, Bill. You're not learning.
Mm-hmm.
You call yourself as educated as you can, but you're very, very uneducated because you don't understand that society change, people change, things become popular. And you know what? I love the fact that we can immerse ourselves in all these great things now, all these texts, mm-hmm. all these amazing kind of, and they're like time capsules, you know, that we can show to the next generation. I'm great at being a dad. I have four kids of my own, and they've immersed themselves in everything that I used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have it any other way. And as far as Bill, maybe he wants to be a house N-word, I don't know. Because apparently that's funny somehow to him, but at the same
probably, like you know, it's funny real quick.
Yeah,
Sarah Silverman, who I do love, but also has said stupid things in her past, but she's owned up to it.
Yeah,
at least she understands the privilege factor. She gets it. Like she tries her best not to like let her privilege be the best of her. She did an episode on her show on Hulu, and it really talked about the effects of white privilege and how it affects, you know, people in my culture and people in my society and community, and how she kind of like was needed to address that to people who are of her community of how this happens, and it does happen. Dr. Phil also did one as well. But at least they understand, and it's like nobody's perfect. You're gonna foul up. You're gonna probably have a human error. We're all capable of it, and we just need to allow each other to forgive that. And so, and saying that, I hope someday Bill Maher looks back at this and says, like, yeah, I made a stupid decision.
That's what I'm thinking, because we all make mistakes. I've made a ton of mistakes myself, or you know, because you've basically we've been friends for like how many years now? About 3 years?
You know, three, four? No, it's probably been 4 years now. Like ACMG's been around since like it's going on five, I think now, five or six.
Yeah,
and, yeah, you've been around for quite a while at that part. So I got to
and
know.
I know
seasons of you.
Yeah, and you see how much I acknowledge my mistakes and I work on my issues.
And I had to help.
And I think, yeah. But I think that's kind of the thing that shows there's a difference between someone who's willing to do that and someone who isn't.
Yeah, correct.
And I think that's kind of that's the difference between privilege and those who come from like a poor upbringing and are trying to like. I think what makes me stronger is the ability to own up and learn.
And learn.
And I think that's kind of where privilege doesn't allow you to do so because you can't. Because you're given everything.
You've got this barrier that you don't have to abide by.
Exactly. Like, you're not under the glass ceiling. You're above it.
Yeah.
And you're never going to go below that unless your life comes crashing down and everyone hates you. Mm-hmm. But you'll never go below that. So because you're above that poverty line, you'll never see it.
Yeah.
And to everybody else who has been victims because of the color of their skin or because of their like pay level, just remember that as long as you acknowledge there are problems and you can own your mistakes and use them as ways to work on things,
yeah,
you're doing better than most schools in the States. and in the UK as well, to the truth, because we are acknowledging history so that we don't repeat it, so we find our way and become a better version of ourselves. And I don't think Bill will ever have that privilege, and that's the sad part.
Yeah.
Because he's been making one too many mistakes.
But the funny thing is, I think I gotta if I've really got to do my homework and research his history. But I'm sure he's a guy from the ground up too. That's the thing. I don't think he was ever privileged. I think he's privileged by association.
But I think he's more privileged now than
he was. Oh hell yeah! Because he has that associated privilege amongst the platform privilege he has now as well.
Well, but it's also like the fact like you've got Bono, right? And the people, I asked someone recently, why do you hate Bono? And they went, because he has this sense of privilege. He keeps going to people, you need to donate money to all these causes and help these charities, and people are like, Bono, you have a ton of money,
by the way.
Yeah, you have a ton of money. Why don't you help them?
Yeah.
You know, and he takes one photo with an African kid that's starving, and then suddenly, like, you know, I've done my bit.
I think Bono is the subject of what happened with Michael Jackson. You start to become this holier than life type of figure, and it becomes tiresome to the mindset of those in society who actually probably in reality want to do the same thing. If they had the opportunity, but can't, so they can't. And it's the same way. It's the way society is now. Whenever you have somebody, like, say, what you're doing with acting, what I'm doing with God knows what else, and you got other people who want to do that, but don't have the means of doing it, or don't earn the right to do it, or don't, you know what I'm saying? And I'm saying earn the right as in saying, they don't do what it needs to be done to get to that point to be able to do it, because you got to work at it. You got to earn it. You have to work hard for it. And some people just want that situation now without going through the grind. You know, I've said it many times. People want to lay claim to the name and the game without the gain. And
that's the problem. There's so many people. I've got a guy on my friend's list. I'm not going to name him. But he keeps going on about the fact that he wants to be a hip hop star. And he's like, no one wants to do a song with me. No producer wants to work with me. And I'm like, you got to stop complaining and you got to start making things happen. Because if you don't make things happen, then it's never going to happen. I lost my agent around about 5 months back now.
Yeah.
And I've never been busier,
right?
Because I've been finding the work on my own.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. But a lot of actors are like, well, I don't have an agent, so I'm not going to get any work. I'm like, screw that. I'm going to just go out and find as many casting sites as I can, pay the fees, and get as much work as I can. Even if it's low paid, I'm still getting paid. I'm still doing my thing.
And as for your friend with the hip hop situation, has he not seen your interviews with Megaran?
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why he friended me.
Okay, then.
I literally, every time I comment, like, me and a few others who are associated with Megaran circles commented on it and said to him the same thing. Stop complaining. Get out there and do it for yourself. Like, get yourself a small job. Earn the money that you can so you could pay for studio time.
Right.
Get your music out there. And start,
I feel like he's a guy that watches TV and sees, like, Hakeem Lyons from Empire all of a sudden, like, just has that position where he was born into that position.
Yeah.
But other people had to grind for that position. Like, again, when people tell me that, and I've heard people in my circle or you who used to be in my circle, because I don't tolerate it anymore.
Yeah, I don't either. I just, like, get up and do it.
Because if you're not real about it, I know the ones who are real about it, and they're not complaining, they're not bitching, they're not crying, they're just doing it. And they know, no matter how long it takes for them to do it, no matter what it takes for them to do it, they're doing it, or they're making it happen. I've had the pleasure of, culminating myself of the likes of yourself, Megaran, all these great actors and actresses from different, you know, facets of our fandoms, and hearing their stories of how they grinded, having to record those stories on my show. And at this point, it's like, if somebody tells me that, I'm like, no, you just haven't done enough, and you're not really wanting to do enough. There's no way in hell, because you really
it's like, work hard.
We're sacrificing right now.
Yeah, and it's, dude, I cut my life, I barely spend money as is. Right. I save every penny, and I know what my end game is.
Right.
And I think that's the sense, there's a difference, I say, between privilege and between those who know that they can work from the ground up. And there's that sense of self where it's like, I don't need to do this, mm-hmm. rather than I need to do this to make sure I at least make a little bit of noise. Because making even the smallest bit of noise,
yeah,
you're still making noise.
Still making noise. Yeah, somebody is going to hear it, and damn sure if it's the right person. And yeah. Again, going back to Stan Lee, a guy who was a kid who should have been in school, but he was working because of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And got his job, worked his ass off, and some 60 years later took him to get to that point. And remember, when he made Spider-Man, and when he made Fantastic Four in 1963 and 1962 and 1 and all this stuff, how old was he? Was he like 40 at that time or something like that? You know, so things, and I tell my clients this all the time, things don't happen to you in a day. It doesn't happen to you in a week. No. It doesn't happen to you in a month.
Rarely does.
Year or even 5 years. It happened when it needs to be, but all through the road, you need to be strong and you need to be passionate and you need to love what you're doing, regardless of what you're gaining.
Yes.
Because that's when people are going to see what you're doing. Because they're like, why does he love it so much? You know, let's find out why he loves it so much and why this person is doing so well and what they're doing. I want to be a part of this. I want to do something with this person.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And it'll always be that case. Like, seeing from when Megaran, back to when I first met him to now,
mm-hmm.
guy's gone to strides, right? Same goes for Stan. And the way that I've seen from that, I regret never ever meeting Sam.
Mm-hmm.
But as I see him and seen the way that as a human being, he's always managed to put his best foot forward. And I think that's something that we can learn from guys like him.
And the other thing, too, is how humble Stan Lee always was. He always absolutely, truly loved everything he did. All of his fans you could feel it just being near him.
Yeah. And then the thing is, without those fans, he would never have, you know.
Yeah.
He
knew this. Knew this.
What he has.
Did you ever see the last bit of footage that he's done? The last video footage that he's done?
No.
The last video footage, I believe, is him saying how much he appreciated all of the fans for everything they have ever given to him and for everything he's. Just the appreciation. It's like, no matter what. I mean, I believe when I got a chance to see him at the con that I went to,
mm-hmm.
he was under the weather, but he was still going. He was like 90, what? I think he was 90 or 91 at the time. And he was still going. I was so amazed at him, but he would not stop. He was signing tons of autographs. Somebody has to really, truly love doing this to really want to do this at 90 years old. Okay, speaks volumes. Absolutely speaks volumes, and I commend him. And all I say is that I hope, like I said, I hope Bill Maher looks at this hopefully years from now, or maybe pick up a one book or a Spider-Man book or something, or one of his friends who is maybe fans of it, and really hopefully get him to understand why this guy was so great at what he does and why he's so relevant and always been relevant to this time. He's immortal. He's truly immortal. Last question I have for you. I have some friends who are teachers, and some of them, one of them in particular, shout out to Will Walt. He is a huge comic book fan, and he utilizes comic books as a way of teaching. Much like Shakespeare was used in classes and still is used in classes right now. Maybe 10, 20 years from now, do you see Stan Lee being considered a form of sophisticated literature?
I think eventually his work, I think his work will be considered something in that same context. I think basically you'll have maybe screenwriting classes breaking down his scripts,
mm-hmm.
Comic book classes where they'll teach about like writing comics because they don't usually teach that at schools.
Yeah.
But I think the more that the comic book format is growing,
mm-hmm.
the more we'll see a lot about his work.
Especially because his work is such a timeline.
Yeah, and they will basically, like, they even talk about
his work. It's a cultural timeline, for that matter.
In entrepreneurial classes, in business classes, they talk about it. because they talk about how a company went from one direction to another.
Yeah.
He's already being, his stuff has already been talked about, and that's the thing. I think eventually it will get to the point that maybe everyday education was. I remember when acting wasn't taught at schools. It was a add-on subject.
Yeah.
Now every place teaches it.
Yeah. You know what's funny, too? Another thing that we need to add on, I mentioned this before when I did the show on him, promotion. Promotion. Yeah. Promotion. Branding. He's an example I give to clients more than ever now, because if you tell them the story about Stan Lee and Steve Ditko and how, because Stan Lee put himself out there so much, Stan Lee was P. Diddy before P. Diddy.
Yeah.
Stan Lee, I mean, put himself out there for the sake of Marvel. I don't know if it was just for the benefit of it. I don't know if he realized that how much he benefited himself by being out there, but he was strictly out there promoting Marvel, but his name got out there just as much in saying so. But there was always the controversy of Steve Ditko and the rest of the guys being pissed off, because whenever Marvel came about, he was synonymous with it. That was clearly because he wanted to put himself out there, but Steve Ditko was a little bit too shy and didn't know how to present himself, you know, promotionally to, you know, the media and the press and all the stuff. So he kind of stayed in the background, as did all the other writers and artists at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's one of the reasons why artists got their names on their work.
Yes.
The Bullpen Bulletin.
Yes, absolutely. And again, the branding aspect of it, he could have taught branding and promotion and marketing way before any of these classes were done, because he's been doing it without doing classes, but doing it. He understood it. And yeah. his way of doing things is still being done to this day with other people. And I've even told people who I work with in the past, if you're going to do something, if you're going to be a part of something, you have to really represent it. You have to show your pride. You have to show your love. If not, nobody's going to see you. Like you said, if you don't make even a little bit of noise, nobody's going to see you.
Mm-hmm.
And as for that reason, you know, they never continue what they were doing, because part of it was that they wanted things to just happen without them having to do it. They put a seed on the ground and expect it to grow on its own. And so they walk away from it and expect it to grow on its own. And that doesn't work. You have to preserve and groom and nurture that seed from the door. And that seed has your name on it. Okay. So that was one of the things that I always, you know, say. I'm like, that's a big benefit. Just watch what Stan Lee has done throughout over the 50, 60 years of him doing Marvel, even to this day, you know, branding. He was a brand master. He was a marketing master at this point. But I mean, like I said, Stan Lee is one of the greatest American writers of our time. And, you know, he wanted to be Stanley Lieber and do it, but he did it through Stan Lee, and we can't thank him enough for it. I hope that someday Bill Maher will be able to understand that. But for now, if not, you know, his loss is our gain. And that gain is going to grow throughout time and beyond that and beyond our lives.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine now a world without him. And I'm saying that. And I'm sure other people will echo that as well. So
Stan Lee has made this world a better place just by being Stan Lee.
Freaking luckily. And in his words, enough said. So, Michael, thank you for being on the show as always, man. I always love having you on here, man. Real quick, just let everybody know what you're up to and how they can find you.
Yeah, I'm acting in things. I usually post it on my acting timeline, Michael Burhan. Facebook.com, Michael Burhan Actor. My website's going to be redone. I've got a new show reel coming out. I'm finishing up on Chinese television currently. I'm in TVB's Fist Fight. I play one of the guys who ends up killing the lead. So I'm going to be on the last episode of that season. It's a limited series, but still. It's kind of like it has a punch out kind of thing going on with it.
Sounds like a reality show of some sort.
No, it's literally a Chinese TV show. So I'm on that. I end up killing someone at the end. I play one of the villains. Also, you can find me on an episode of Secrets, season 5, episode 3. Mm-hmm. I play Samtik, the pharaoh in the suburbs. Apparently, there's a bit of a stink people are going on about, saying that I'm not black enough to be an Egyptian.
Yep. I didn't see that coming.
apparently I'm too white. You know, me and Rami Malek are too white. So that's that going on. And yeah, you can catch me in 2019 and 2020 in those movies, because Wonder Woman 84 has been pushed back to 2020.
Yeah.
I
think it's appropriate considering everything that might happen during 2020. I don't mind.
Yeah, well, she wanted it on the same day. Apparently it was Godot's decision. She wanted it in April 2020, her and the team. Mm-hmm. So it gives them a bit more time to polish the movie up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
So I did that, and I've got there's another movie I'm going to be auditioning for soon that I might be in by the end of this year, but we'll see. But yeah, I've been busy. You can also find me on youtube.com/TheNerdGenius. I do product reviews, tech reviews, and I also do video game reviews and stuff. I'm going to be reviewing the new Pokemon game soon. And that's pretty much it.
I highly recommend you guys check it out, because you've done really great with production value on that too.
Yeah, and I feel like I've grown as a YouTuber in a sense. Like, the subscriber count is it's nothing amazing, but it's jumped to like 715 subscribers. So I'm very, very happy. Thank you for all those people who watched me.
That's a great indie show.
Yes. So yeah, check out season 2 of A Rather British Review on there as well. You'll love it. I've got a weird computer AI sending me from place to place.
Right.
But yeah, I shall bid you guys adieu. And if you want to learn more about me, just add me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and add me on Instagram, because you'll find me on those places.
And he is a part of the ACMG Facebook group, which if you're not a part of that group and you're 18 or older with a legit profile of 5 years or more.
I'm number 2 on there, by the way.
You're number 2, by the way, yes. The Elite 10. Yeah, Elite 10.
I'm like a number 2 in the toilet, though. Number 2.
You could definitely come along at facebook.com/groups/ACMG1. You can join it. If you want a part of a really great group of people and who loves the same fandoms that you are, that you enjoy, and this community that we have that birthed this podcast. So you could definitely check us out there. Also, you can check out the podcast, of course, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and Podbean as well, and TalkTimeLive.com. You can check that out.
You need to get it on Spotify, man. Get some of that Spotify deals.
Dude, that is like one of the hardest things to get into right now. So that's going to be a play. And I still got to get back on iHeartRadio, because when I did the switch, iHeartRadio was a part of the whole Libsyn thing, so now I had to try to do it manually, get them back on, and switch my feeds over. So that's the thing. But Spotify, yeah, that's going to be something in the future to work on as well.
Carrier Pigeon. You need it on Carrier Pigeon.
Yeah, I remember Megaran said he had some trouble with that one too.
Yeah, he got it on there eventually.
He finally got it on there eventually. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm going to keep it moving as much as I can on that one. But definitely, you can check all those formats there for now. But, you know, we will have much more to come by with that. Elseworld is coming next week. We got, again, the Game Awards, which I'll review probably the week after. We got Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. A lot going on this week. So I don't know what the hell we're going to cover. But and then we got all the movies coming down the line, too. So
yeah. We'll
have much more of ACMG to follow in the coming weeks. So ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of myself and Sir Michael Burhan, all I got to say is learn to let go, live life, and love all things anime, comics, movies, and games. This is ACMG Presents Talk Time Live. We are out of here. Take care and have a great week, people. ACMG Presents Talk Time Live is brought to you in part by Viewfinders Identity Search and Design, your choice for web design, graphic design, and all multimedia development needs. Visit VFISAD.com and let us bring your vision to reality.